You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Four wins and three letters. MVP. With that, welcome into a fourth consecutive joyous post-game episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Monday evening, the Rockets are finally back above 500 at 15-14. That's because against the Utah Jazz at Toyota Center, the Rockets did, in fact, win their fourth consecutive basketball game, 102-97 over the Utah Jazz. And the highlight, really, it's one player. It's that MVP that we outlined off the top. James Harden, the Rockets won 102-97. Nearly 50% of Houston's 102 points came from James Harden with 47, including 13 of Houston's 19 in the fourth quarter. The Rockets seemed to run out of gas late. The Jazz just had a spectacular defensive effort led by Quinn Snyder, always one of the best tacticians in the game, especially defensively. Rudy Gobert in the middle. It seemed the Rockets were just struggling for answers. They were, with 2 minutes left in the game, the Rockets were stuck on just 11 points in the period, and somehow in the final minute 50, Harden scored 8 points for the Rockets to put this game away, including a pair of threes. The first, the biggest shot of the game, when the Rockets were tied at 94, and that put them back up three. And then, after the Jazz cut the lead to two on a dubious foul that went Donovan Mitchell's way on Eric Gordon shooting a three, Mitchell made all three free throws. Of course, Jazz fans could argue that James Harden traveled and got three free throws on the prior possession, although Harden did miss one of the three. Either way, it was just a two-point game with about 15 seconds left. Harden drilled the step-back three, good defense, just better shot-making, and it continues a trend that we've seen from James over this past week, really over the past several seasons in Houston. This is just one of the most dominant offensive players the game has ever seen. But even by his standards, this past week, he entered with two consecutive triple-doubles, averaged 37 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists per game. The NBA awarded him the Western Conference Player of the Week award earlier Monday. That's the 19th time he's won it in his career. And somehow, it felt like he was even better. You would think he would be running out of gas, and it seemed briefly in the fourth quarter like he was. But somehow, when it mattered most, he found that extra gear, which is what great players have to do, and that's certainly what James Harden is. Now, he didn't have the triple-double again, had just 6 rebounds and 5 assists in this one, but a lot of that comes down to the way the Jazz were defending. They made sure that they were not going to double off shooters. They were going to dare Harden to beat them, especially with the ability to throw multiple quality long defenders at him and then have the presence of Rudy Gobert near the rim. They don't have to help the way a lot of teams do, so the assists were lower, the rebounds were lower. Didn't matter, because even though he had to take on the scoring burden, James Harden did what he does, and he got the Rockets the win. Now, that's not the only thing that happened with the Rockets tonight, and as we move our way through the podcast, we will talk about some things that weren't so good, specifically the issue of does he have enough help, because Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, none of them shot anywhere near their expected levels of efficiency tonight. We'll get into that in subsequent segments, but to lead off, it's all about James Harden, because first off, the Rockets won the game. It's their fourth straight, all over quality Western Conference teams. I know all three teams a week ago had winning records, and the Jazz, while they're just 14-17, I think nearly everyone expects them to ultimately figure it out and be right back in the Western Conference playoff mix by the end of the season. This is what can be a stifling defensive team when they're on, and it felt like, especially down the stretch, that's what they were tonight. And by the way, when I was mentioning James Harden's stat line, I forgot to mention that he had 5 steals as well. There were several possessions in which he played that free safety role very, very well. So did Chris Paul, who had 4 steals. The Rockets collectively as a team forced 24 Utah turnovers. So while I don't think anyone's going to say that James Harden is a dynamic defensive presence, in certain moments, he can be a positive, and really, for a guy that carries the workload that he does offensively, that's all you're looking for, especially when the game is close late, and I thought he was playable then. Really, the Rockets' defense, the last 2 minutes, was pretty good. The only points the Jazz got came on that dubious Eric Gordon foul of Donovan Mitchell attempting the three. And certainly the stat line from an efficiency standpoint wasn't as pretty for James. Yeah, he had 47 points, but he shot it 31 times. That's far more field goal attempts than he's used to taking. But again, it comes down to how the Jazz are defending. They're not going to let, because they have that unique combination of long defenders on the perimeter and Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors near the rim. This is a team that going in had beaten the Rockets two consecutive times by an average of 19 points per game. They clearly have some matchup advantages. Now, I know the Rockets last year beat them 8 of 9 in the regular season and the playoffs combined. Well, that's last year. This year, it's been a whole new set of challenges for the Rockets. They started 1-5. They started 11-14. And it's not the same team as a year ago. We hope that they find that level of play, but they're not there yet. And we'll talk about that plenty as our recap goes through. But to me, it just forced James Harden into a slightly different game because he wasn't able to get his teammates involved as well as he did last week. The offense was not as free-flowing as it was when the Rockets were just beautiful for stretches of the game against the Blazers, the Lakers, and the first half against the Grizzlies. But even though it was a different style of game for the Rockets, who have been the league's number one offense for basically a month now and one of the better teams of all time offensively, you go back to last year, it wasn't that type of game for the Rockets, but James Harden, he had to be a volume shooter because no one else was capable or hot on this given night, and he found a way to deliver because really, when you get in that game, that slog, that half-court slugfest, well, you just got to find somebody to make the tough shots, and 8 points from Harden, could have been 9 if he didn't miss a free throw, but he made 15 of 16 on the night, so you're certainly not going to complain about that. 8 points in the final 145. It seemed like he was out of gas because he's certainly taken on a Herculean workload over the last week. And tonight in particular, he had to give so much. He barely sat for any length of time at all in the second half because the Rockets were trying to hold on to that lead. Part of the downside when you start a season as negatively as the Rockets did, as I've said plenty of times, you're always trying to overcome the weight of that losing record. Now, finally, a winning record, 15-14, but certainly still well below expectations. You can tell Mike D'Antoni didn't want to lose this game. The Rockets didn't, so James played 40 and a half minutes, barely sat in the second half, and it seemed like that there was a stretch in which his legs were starting to go on in there. One of the only 6 points by non-Harden Rockets came from Chris Paul with about 3 minutes left in the game on a runner, and that put the Rockets up 4 at the time. We saw Paul try one more, he missed, and from then on, it just seemed like Harden said, look, this team is going to sink or swim with my moves. And he took over the game, and even if his legs were tired, he found a way to get the ball in the net, and the Rockets won the game for their fourth consecutive. And what's really impressive, against a team that has a game plan tailored just for him, a ton of length on the perimeter, Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors near the basket, it's just remarkable how smart and how crafty James Harden is, because it's not like he's the most explosive player in the NBA. Now, yes, he did have a poster dunk on Rudy Gobert tonight that was just breathtaking, similar to what he did against JaVale McGee just a few nights ago, but he's certainly not the best shooter in the league. He's not the quickest, but what makes everything go together is just how he sees the floor and the adjustments he continues to make. One thing the Jazz did a ton tonight, they shaded him hard to his right, because certainly the book is out that if you let him start going downhill to his left-hand side, his dominant side, you're in trouble. So they forced him to his right. Well, there's a couple of things he's added this year. I don't know if added's the right word because he's had him in the toolbox, but they've just gotten even better. His step back going right, and then he's gotten even more explosive, it looks like. The dunk he had over Gobert that I mentioned a few moments ago, it was with his right hand, and that's something we've seen him do more this year when defenders comedically overplay him to the left side, begging him to go right. Well, if you make a sudden move, and it helps if you start earlier in the shot clock, then because they're so overcompensating, they're not going to be able to recover quickly enough, and many times you're going to be able to throw it down because the big man, not just the guy in the perimeter, but the big man is also shading you to go left. So if you're quick and decisive going the other way, there's going to be something there. You've just got to be strong enough and explosive enough off your weak side. And it seems that James Harden, even at 29 years old, you wonder every year, is this going to be the year that there's a little bit of fall off? Somehow, this is a guy who is now 29 years old, and it feels like he is only adding to his game. 47 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals against a very quality Utah team that I thought played their butts off tonight defensively. Tip your hat to James. He is that brilliant. And the upside is that if you have a player like James Harden, the reigning MVP, who's now averaging over 40 points per game over the last week, the player of the week in the Western Conference, you are capable of winning any basketball game. He always gives you a chance. And for all the negatives, all the pessimism that has emerged from the first couple of months of the season, that's one thing that is still there. If you have a healthy James Harden, there's a reason to play the basketball games. You have hope. That's the upside of what we saw tonight. However, there was also plenty of downside, and we'll talk about that momentarily. Now, jumping back into the program, our Monday evening recap of the Rockets' 102-97 win over the Jazz at Toyota Center in Houston. We spent the first 10 minutes or so lauding the greatness of James Harden, now averaging over 40 points per game in the past week. All four Rockets wins, so it's not like he's putting up empty numbers. No, they're coming in wins all against great, or at least very good, opponents in the Western Conference. The Blazers, the Lakers, the Grizzlies, the Jazz. I know the Jazz are 14-17, but they're going to figure it out. Defensively, they are just a bear, the same way they were last year. Quinn Snyder, one of the team's, or the league's best coaches. The Jazz are going to be fine. They played very well tonight, and if not for James Harden giving just an incredible effort, they win this game in Houston tonight, even when they went through a stretch in the second quarter. Now, yes, the Rockets' defense did play pretty well. Tip your hat to those guys. I thought defensively, you mentioned James Harden and Chris Paul. They set the right tone with 5 steals and 4 steals, respectively. But the Rockets' defense, yeah, they forced a lot of misses from Utah, especially in the early going. The Jazz missed 17 consecutive shots, I believe, at one point in the first half. They were just at 37 points at the break, although they did score 60 in the second half, which got them to 97 for the game. I think some of that was less the Rockets playing worse defense and more just a matter of eventually things were going to even out. Also, with the Jazz having Gobert and Favors and playing a team in Houston that other than Clint Capella doesn't really have that much of a rebounding presence. The Rockets have been bottom 5 in defensive rebounding all year. They start P.J. Tucker, who's just 6'6", at the 4 spot. And so when you're going up against Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors, there's going to be a rebounding mismatch. Jazz, for the game, won that 52-39. And so ultimately, I don't know if the Rockets' defense regressed so much as the Jazz just hit a few more shots that they missed in the first half. And they also got a few easier shots, especially the Rockets' legs got tired than the mountains of men that are Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert near the rim. Then their presence got all the more imposing, and it got Utah some easier points. I don't know that Utah's defense Houston's defense really regressed that much. I think it was more just Utah coming back to average, an ascension to the mean, if you will. That said, while Houston's defense certainly was not the liability it's been for a lot of this year, I also wouldn't necessarily say it was a great performance. The Jazz certainly played a key role in just missing a lot of shots. So all in all, for Houston's defense, while you look at the numbers and it'll say that it's one of Houston's better performances of the year, I would say it's a positive side. I wouldn't say it's anything spectacular. I need to see it from one game against a team that doesn't miss 17 consecutive shots, which shouldn't happen no matter how good the defense is, before I take too much stock into that. I would say it's nice to see that they're playing hard, but it's hard to say how much was Houston and how much was Utah on the defensive end of the floor. And if you want more on the Utah side of the fence, because I know they were pretty inspired by at least their defensive effort and certainly impressed by James Harden, then I urge you to check out Locked On Jazz, hosted by Jazz radio voice David Locke. He's the godfather of this Locked On podcast network. You can follow him on Twitter at Locked On Sports. Or if you want takes from David and anyone else across the Locked On podcast network, why don't you check out Locked On NBA Net on Twitter or on Instagram, which has a roundup of our local experts across the NBA, and you can get the other side of the fence from the opposing teams if you want their insight on what's going right for their team or how they perceive the Rockets on a given night. Anyway, back to my takes on Houston. Defensively, it was a positive showing, but given the opponent and given the fact that the Rockets are bottom 5 in the league defensively on the season, and the fact that even though the defensive, from a points perspective, was better, they still were out-rebounded by 13, I don't know that this is anything that really changes the narrative of the season, which is that the Rockets are rapidly improving and very good again on offense, but still trying to find their way defensively, and it starts with defensive rebounding. That's been the most consistent issue for them. It's not just about losing Ariza and Bamute. It's been about issues with the glass, and they still need to get better. The Rockets aren't switching as much with Clint Capella anymore. They're dropping him more in coverage. Perhaps that helps. It didn't tonight, but maybe it's exaggerated based on the Jazz's excessive length near the rim. Generally speaking, I don't think this one game, other than just reflecting on the marvels of James Harden, really changes all that much about the outlook for the season on the Rockets on the defensive end of the floor. Generally, they need to rebound better, and whether that be put their players in different positions with what they have or look for external upgrades, I think that need is still there, as reflected in the negative 13 rebounding total for the game. Bigger picture, what I was actually a little more concerned about tonight was the Rockets on the offensive end of the floor outside of James Harden. Now, Harden was brilliant, and it wasn't as if he had no help. P.J. Tucker made 4 of his 7 threes. That's now, I believe, 8 of 16 in his last 2 games, 50%. So it's always nice when P.J., especially from the corners, starts heating up. But Chris Paul, his last 4 games, 30% or worse from the field. Eric Gordon, 4 of 13. For the season, he's shooting 37% from the field and 29% from 3. Clint Capella, 2 of 8 tonight. Now, Clint played his butt off. He had 5 block shots, 14 rebounds. but he did not finish well at the rim yet again against Gobert and Favors. He was just 5 of 14 the first time in Utah. Tonight, he was 2 of 8. And that's where, to me, the Jazz are a good litmus test, because they reflect the level of defense that you see in the playoffs. And, you know, you think back to a year ago, the Jazz series, the Warriors series, how many of those did the Rockets steal in the final 6 minutes of the game because Chris Paul bailed them out? And while some of it might have been, especially in the Jazz series when James Harden was allegedly sick, Harden not quite being 100%, but a lot of it is just opposing defenses. When you play the best and it slows down to a half-court crawl, they are able to take away what you do best. Now, they're not going to make Harden a complete non-factor, but they'll commit additional resources to where he at least becomes a little inefficient. So you need someone else to be able to step up, and that's part of the rationale for putting Eric Gordon into the starting lineup. I think especially with Chris Paul now at age 33 in his year 14 season, then you put a little bit less of a burden on Chris. I still don't think all of it is just the aging curve. I think some of it is randomness and or acute injuries, as evidenced by the fact that he's still below 80% on free throws as compared to 92% a year ago. That's something that has nothing to do, or very, very little, with age, and that oftentimes has something to do with either a mechanical funk or some sort of acute injury. So no, I don't think it's all age. But generally speaking, as Chris Paul ages, the Rockets know they need to do some things differently. I think that's part of the rationale for putting Eric Gordon into the starting lineup, for having one more creator. Well, right now, Eric Gordon isn't delivering, and even with the help of Eric Gordon putting three creators out there on the perimeter instead of two, Chris Paul still isn't delivering. So 3 of 10 from Chris, 4 consecutive games, 30% or below from the field. Eric Gordon, 4 of 13 again for the season. He's at 37% and 29% from 3. That is far below his usual efficiency. And Clint Capella, for all the praise he gets, he works his butt off defensively. He's gotten better as a rebounder, as a shot blocker. Offensively, his production is still dependent on James Harden, Chris Paul, and guys that can break down opponents off the dribble and force double teams. It's not like you're just going to dump it down to Clint Capella on the low block and expect him to finish over the types of elite competition, top-notch defenses that you would play in the playoffs like you did a year ago against these Jazz and then the Warriors. So it sounds weird to say, in a season in which the Rockets are now top five in offense, I believe, and bottom five in defense, that you come away more worried about offense, especially the game that the Rockets win. But that's kind of the way I felt tonight. Now, certainly they had enough to win tonight, because James Harden was Superman, but that's not going to be reasonable to expect every night. Now, the good news, if you believe in the law of averages, Chris Paul is better than what he shot over the past four games and this season. The same applies to Eric Gordon. And as mentioned earlier, no, I don't buy that all of it is just age-related and that he's falling off. With Eric Gordon, he's not even 30 years old. I think this stuff can be fixed, and if you believe in the law of averages, then these guys should have an ascension to the mean, the term I used earlier with the Jazz scoring 60 points in the second half after just 37 in the first. But bigger picture, for the Rockets to get where they want to go, I don't think it's reasonable to expect them this season to go from a bottom five, bottom 10 defense, what they are right now, to being top five the way they were at times a year ago. Best case, over time, I think you get it back to middle of the pack. Because some of it's not just personnel, I think some of it too, NBA teams, they make adjustments, and whereas the switching scheme caught everyone off guard a year ago, it wasn't just personnel, I think some of it was catching opponents by surprise. Now NBA coaches, they're smart, they make adjustments, and it's on the Rockets to adjust back. I don't know if you can go from bottom five in the league the way you are now to an elite defense again. I think your best hope this season is to get back to just a passable level defensively, and hope your offense becomes elite enough historically to where it can carry you. And as great as James Harden is, it can't be James alone. And this game tonight reflected that. As great as James was, scoring 47 points, willing them to the finish, at the same time, they won by just 5 points at home against a Jazz team that certainly is not playing that well right now. They're below 500, and a team that trailed by as many as 18 points in the first half and went through a stretch in which I believe they missed 17 consecutive points. So kudos to James. He deserves all the credit. He certainly gives you a chance in any game the way he plays, but I would say the bucket of cold water you have to throw, and that's why it's glass half full, glass half empty, is that to actually get where the Rockets have to go, they need more from Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella. With Capella, maybe you can teach him a little bit more in terms of finishing through traffic. It's something he got better at as the season went along a year ago, but I don't think he's magically going to become a different player. What you really need of those other three, those supporting guys for James, is for Chris Paul and Eric Gordon to be the shooters, the creators that you're paying them to be and what they've been for the majority of their careers. And so tonight, even as great as James was, reminding you of his brilliance, you also had a reminder that individually, the biggest declines relative to expectations this season have been Eric Gordon and Chris Paul. And for the Rockets to ultimately get where they want to go, those two need to get it figured out. Final point of our usual three-part recap. It was a very down night for the Rockets bench. You look at the scoring totals in Monday's 102-97 win by the Rockets over the Jazz. Harden had 47. Chris Paul had 11. PJ Tucker had 16, mentioned 4 of 7 from 3. Eric Gordon, despite shooting just 4 of 13, did make a couple of threes, 12 points. Clint Capela had 5. The bench, Gerald Green had no points in nearly 16 minutes. Nene, Daniel House each had 4, and Brandon Knight had 3, although his one three-pointer, he was 1 of 5 from the game, that was the first shot, the first points he has made since February 2017. So as Brandon Knight continues to knock the rust off, that was a key shot for him emotionally, I think. He needed to see the ball go through the bucket, and the crowd gave him a nice ovation when he came off after that stretch in the first half. I think they realized the significance of it too, so kudos to the smart fans at Toyota Center for sensing that moment. But this was a game, a combined 11 points off the bench that was reminiscent of earlier in the year when, even with Eric Gordon, the Rockets were just struggling woefully with their scoring punch off the bench. Gerald Green was 9 of 11 from 3 in his past 3 games. He cooled off in a big way, didn't score, and really got yanked quickly. Threw up a terrible 3 in the third quarter and also lost Kyle Korver, a guy you could never lose. And Mike D'Antoni called timeout, pulled him almost immediately. And Daniel House, now he was still a team best plus 16. The team benefited from his energy a lot. And one thing that was telling, down the stretch, there were moments late in the fourth quarter where it was House and not Gordon who was the third guard out there with Chris Paul and James Harden. And of course, PJ Tucker and Clint Capela up front, because you need Clint Capela against the size of the Jazz. What was interesting to me was that you could sense that Mike D'Antoni knew he needed Brandon Knight. Now, I don't think Knight is quite ready yet. Again, this is a guy who's been over a year and a half since playing basketball. He's coming off a torn ACL and an infection in that same knee. It's going to be a long process, and the Rockets have acknowledged that. The first two games, he played just 4 minutes in each of them. First half, Mike D'Antoni left him out there for nearly 7, long enough to stick that first 3. Then he brought him back and played a couple of minutes even in the fourth quarter instead of Gerald Green. My theory on that, I mentioned that Eric Gordon's out there to make the game a little bit easier for Chris Paul. I think also, if you play Brandon Knight in the fourth quarter, another ball handler, another creator, and perhaps give him minutes that otherwise went to Gerald Green, then potentially that relieves a little bit of the ball handling, the playmaking burden off of Chris Paul. So what does that let Chris do? Well, a couple of things. First, you can play off the ball more, save your legs if you need to, hopefully get in rhythm with more looks. But one other thing that it does, it gives you more opportunities to play Chris and James together. Because what's the easiest thing for Chris Paul? Well, to play him with James Harden. If you want to get Chris going, not just in the given game, but in the season as a whole, then the best thing for anybody is to play with James Harden. And that felt like that's what the Rockets were doing more. We've seen the Rockets for really the entirety of the CP3 James Harden era, they've stuck to this principle of saying 48 minutes of Hall of Fame point guard play. And I don't think they're necessarily moving on from that now, but part of it, while it sounds good on paper, it's also based on necessity, because the Rockets have never had another point guard that they could at all trust in that era. Well, if Chris struggles to get going, I'm not saying you go night and day from that, but who knows? Maybe you go a couple of minutes in the first half and a couple of minutes in the second half where you don't have either of Chris Paul or James Harden in the game because you're trying to bring the best out of Chris Paul, get him going, by playing him more alongside James Harden. Or even if you're playing him out there with Brandon Knight, well, it's a two-point guard lineup, and so you can give some of the playmaking and the ball handling burden to Brandon instead of Chris. Bigger picture, as I said last segment, to get where you want to go, you need to get Chris Paul going, and that's where I think a lot of these changes are aimed at. I think that's part of why you go with the three playmakers in the starting lineup, even though Eric Gordon has to hold up his end of the bargain, and he's not right now. I think on paper, that's what it's designed for. But also, playing Brandon Knight in the fourth quarter, the first two games, Thursday and Saturday, he got 4 minutes, just token minutes, it felt like, in the first half, and it was just to knock the rust off. To see him play nearly 7 minutes in the first half, did hit a three, and then to see him come back in the fourth quarter of a game the Rockets really wanted. Again, Harden barely sat in the second half, played 41 minutes, and really, the Rockets, even with the win, they're now just 15-14 on the year. Even though it's just a couple of minutes, they were significant minutes. And it tells you that's the level of trust that Mike D'Antoni has in Brandon Knight. Not saying that his play earns it right now. There's a long, long way to go. And even in, you know, the 9 minutes that Brandon played tonight, he was 1 of 5 from the field. So let's not act like that he was brilliant. No, it's a very long process to get him back. But the point is that the Rockets see him as being worthy of that journey. It's not just lip service when Mike D'Antoni says that when Brandon Knight was in Milwaukee a few years ago, he was an all-star level player. This was a guy averaging 20 points and 5 assists per game. Now, is it reasonable to expect him to fully recover? I don't know. He has had a long road with the knees, but he is just 26 years old. And so the point is, even if it's just a couple of minutes, to see Mike D'Antoni make that tweak against a good defensive team in Utah, and perhaps that makes more creators even more paramount against a team that can lock you up the way the Jazz can. I don't think it's going to be a radical change right now, but down the road, I do think it's an interesting tell that maybe the Rockets change up the rotations a little bit from what we have seen the first year and a half of this Chris Paul, James Harden experiment. Because while we've done this 48 minutes of staggering, some of it, not all of it, I think most of it is because they believe in that, but a little bit might also be because they didn't have any other point guard they could trust. Brandon Knight is not there yet, but I think the Rockets believe he can get there, and if he's capable of doing that, then I think Mike D'Antoni showed you tonight that there might be a little bit of a wrinkle with how they use these guys now that you have a third decent, not going to say he's anywhere near the level of Chris Paul or James Harden, but at least a third trustworthy point guard in the mix. Nothing that's going to change imminently, just something to keep in the back of your mind as we move forward. Anyway, with that, I think we can put a bow on this Monday evening episode. Again, a happy recap of the 102-97 win the Rockets posted over the Jazz at Toyota Center. That's their fourth consecutive win on the season, improving them to 15-14. Jazz fall to 14-17. If you want more content before our next episode, not sure if we'll have a show tomorrow. If we don't, we'll definitely have a show on Wednesday when the Rockets resume play against the Wizards, start of a back-to-back, then they play the Heat on Thursday night. Well, if you want coverage before then, the best place to get it is on Twitter, where if there's breaking news, such as the Rockets releasing Joe Chi on that, we'll have more. They did that earlier today. We'll have more on that later in the week. For now, we don't know anything other than the Rockets just freed up a roster spot with that. But if you want analysis of those types of things that happen over the course of even an off day potentially, then yeah, follow me on Twitter because that's the best place to get real-time intel. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked on Rockets. And as mentioned earlier, also give a follow to Locked on NBA Net. That's the Twitter handle and the Instagram handle for the network as a whole. And you can follow insight, not just, of course, with me here in Houston, because I'm a part of the network, but also you can get a curated feed of hosts like myself, but all over the league. It's kind of the landing spot, the home, if you will, for all of our league-wide coverage. Also, if you would like to get a hold of me in a longer form than just a 280-character tweet, the best place to do that is via email. You can reach me at lockedonrockets@gmail.com. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, or inquire about how to become a potential sponsor of the program going forward. We've got great rates, a lot of specials for new advertisers, and a very captive and growing audience. The Rockets, they were a 65-win team, best in the league by record a season ago, and now they've won 4 in a row. So listens are surging. If you're interested in reaching our growing audience as the Rockets continue to play better and hopefully draw in more listeners, then yes, reach out, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. A great way to get a hold of me. Also, lockedonrockets.com and facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Other ways to get in contact with me or access our prior content. Also, if you're not subscribed to the show already, please do. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you listen to your podcasts, Spotify, the odds are you can find us because we're part of a great network of shows at the aforementioned Lockdown Podcast Network. Also, we're working with all sorts of voice assistants. So if you do voice commands, say play podcast Locked on Rockets, and you can find us that way as well. And as I always say in Houston, check out Locked on Texans as well, because they have a great thing covering the now 10-4 Houston Texans, who are just 2 wins from the first AFC postseason bye in franchise history. Anyway, with the plugs out of the way, this is where we'll leave off. Again, the happy final from Toyota Center. Rockets 102, Jazz 97. Rockets improved to 15-14 on the season, led by an astounding 47 points from now reigning MVP and current Western Conference Player of the Week, James Harden. How sweet it is. With that, enjoy the rest of your evening and come back soon and check out more episodes right here at Locked on Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.